I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Coffin Show, joined now by Dan Devine from The Ringer. On Twitter, at Your Man Devine, I've tweeted out his most recent piece, which was about last night's victory, the Warriors over the Mavs. I would urge you to also read his earlier piece, The Five Most Interesting Players of the Conference Finals, in which he told you in advance that Andrew Wiggins was going to be able to do this to Luka Doncic last night. And so, very impressive. We'll get to that in a minute, Dan. Welcome back to the show. What, in the end, did you make of the Grizzlies' demise at the hands of the same Warriors? We here are nursing this idea that if Steven Adams didn't get COVID and if Ja Morant had been healthy, we're a little sullen, honestly, that they could very well be in this conference finals. Your thoughts?
I mean, I'm certainly not going to sit here and disabuse the entire great city of Memphis of that notion. I think that's a worthwhile thing to hold. But I also kind of want to espouse the idea that, you know, like, weep not for the memories. You know, don't be sad that it's over. Smile because it happened. You know, like, I think, you know, by any estimation, this season resolving to 56 wins, a series win, and taking, like, a reformed version of the, you know, dynastic Warriors, but, like, Steph Curry healthy to, you know, deepen a series even with, you know, your starting center getting COVID and your all-star point guard going out in the middle of the series and the Dylan Brooks of it all and all that. Like, I think that was a pretty impressive and sort of estimable and respectable showing for sure. I think the nature of it just being like two entirely different teams when you have Ja and when you don't have Ja, and the like relative successes and demerits of them, and you know how that matched up with Golden State was like, I think it makes it really hard to kind of figure which healthy version of the Grizzlies would best be served to have beaten them. Like, I feel like I don't really have my brain totally wrapped around it, but I don't know. I guess the glass half full guy is like, right. You might have had two versions of a team that could do it, but, you know, circumstances being what they were, and then, you know, they get nuclear for one game, and kind of there you have it.
Yeah, it was a marvelous, marvelous, marvelous season, and so there is great gratitude for that. If you were Zach Kleiman, not that he seems to need much help these days, but what would you what would you be endeavoring to accomplish this offseason if you were he?
Yeah. I mean, you're right to note that he doesn't exactly a guy who is both younger than me and smarter than me doesn't necessarily need a whole lot from me. But I think, you know, the big question, sort of internal question, I think you have to answer is it. Do you see a move out there, and including ones that you know punters like me don't really see? Do you see a move out there that improves I guess you'd say maybe like that kind of checks off enough boxes in terms of perimeter, defensive, keeping your perimeter defense where it is, but also improving the reliability of the shot creation and the shot making over someone like Dylan Brooks, or packaging together several of those, you know, enticing depth pieces to try to find another higher-end wing piece to put next to Ja and Bain the idea that question of, is Dylan Brooks the sort of starter kit to where you want to go at the three for this team in the long term? And or, you know, do you have enough confidence that, say, Zaire Williams is that already? Or do you still feel like you need a bridge to what that could be? And then, you know, Tyus Jones will have suitors. He certainly earned his way into, I have to imagine, a higher tax bracket with his performance as kind of like the sixth starter on this team. But is it still worth, you know, are they able to find a price point where that's still tangible, you know, still, you know, acceptable for what the Grizzlies' balance sheet needs to look like moving forward with Ja and his Supermax extension going to be coming? And, you know, while still maintaining the flexibility to, if a trade becomes available, to package some of those mid-sized contracts up and go after some big games. So all that to say, I think it's like these are good problems to have. These are problems that, you know, 25 other franchises would love to have, but there are still some kind of sticky wickets to get through, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they navigate. One of my old friends from this business, Paul Flannery, would talk about, like, the best part of the best time you can have in this league is right before you get really, really good, because then once you get really, really good, every other decision becomes harder. The Grizzlies are already really good, but now the harder stuff starts.
Do you think, well, one of the interesting things, of course, is that they were really good in a year that has looked like no other. There are eight teams, it feels like, that could have won the title here. And so that makes you, that's good. Everyone's got a shot, it feels like. It's interesting, though, like if you look at the betting markets, who knows what these rosters will look like a year from, I mean, at the end of the summer. But right now, if you look at the betting markets, the Grizzlies are like the 10th favorite to win the title. Do you imagine that we are in an NBA now that is going to continue to be relative parity, where there can be 8 to 10 teams, that the super team thing is at least taking a back seat for now, and maybe it's the Celtics who jump up 1 year, and maybe it's Dallas who jumps up 1 year, and maybe it's the Grizzlies who jump up 1 year? Or do you think this is a brief pause in the super team construct?
I think it's more likely that it's the latter, if for no other reason than I can't imagine, like, as the value of franchises gets higher and higher, and as, like, the unbelievably wealthy buy more and more franchises, and, you know, you're talking about, you know, hedge fund billionaires and private equity money and, like, the richest of the rich people, like, it's, you know, like, Real Madrid doesn't stop trying to sign the highest priced players in the world just because, like, they already have a bunch of them, you know,
right.
Like, now, it's I mean, and that comes at the expense of, you know, so the smaller teams, they're sort of like feeder clubs for the highest, you know, like the top of the pops in world soccer. But, like, if you, like, somebody's going to come back to the idea of, like, all right, well, yeah, so the Nets thing didn't work, or the Lakers thing only kind of worked, but, like, if you have the chance to get 2 of the 10 best guys, we're still going to do it, you know? The Clippers thing hasn't gone where they wanted to go yet, but that's be more due to injuries. It wasn't because it's a bad idea to try to stack talent. And if, like, the richest of the rich see that as a differentiator and something that they can do, you know, like, they're going to keep trying to do it. Whether now that's not necessarily attainable for everybody, but I think, you know, the fact that Memphis has like one of the richest owners in the league, even though, you know, the small market blues that people keep talking about, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility that, like, even the sort of more minnowy franchises, as we have come to understand them, are going to have, like, crazy money behind them. And if that's the case, that kind of, like, narrows the playing field of who's going to be willing to go after gigantic stars. They might not get them because of stuff like market size and exposure and yada, 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 but I think that, like, I don't know. I don't see a scenario where the most competitive and rich people in the world are like, I don't want stars.
Right.
I think that's gonna keep happening. But I think in the interim, what you get is something close to what you have to imagine is Adam Silver's dream. Oh. Like, you know, where suddenly you've got markets that haven't been fully engaged late into the year in decade, or, you know, a decade and a half, or in 5-10 years, you know, that really feel like they might be one move away. And it makes for a lot more interesting subplots and new matchups late in the season, for sure.
It does feel like a dream, although I think probably in the dream the Knicks and Lakers would be better than they have been this past year. But anyway, so before I get to the teams that are still alive, two of the teams that have been bounced are of interest to me. One is over there where you live, Brooklyn. Sean Marks supposedly lays down the law and says we need players who are all aboard. Is that, what does that even mean? Like, is he real? Like, Kyrie is never going to be all aboard. So what did you make of that whole spiel? This was from a week ago when we were still immersed in the Grizzlies' games. But what did you make of that and the future of the Nets?
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating because I sort of heard two readings of that from people. And one was, this is a shot across the bow and Sean Marks and ownership, like, taking back control of an organization that has seemed to have gone out of their control because it is in the hands of the superstars. And then the other reading of that I heard was, this is Sean Marks making sure that everybody knows that you need to be all in and fit in on the KD and Kyrie version of this team. And if you are not totally cool with the idea that this is the direction of the Brooklyn Nets, you will not be sticking around here or like a free agent that we would sign or whatever. Whether the truth is one or the other or somewhere in the middle, I don't know. But it seemed to me like maybe a rattling of sabers or a puffing up of a chest. But like the only thing that seems to matter in Brooklyn right now, at least, is does Kevin Durant want this to happen? And if Kevin Durant wants Kyrie Irving to be there, and by all indications he does, and there hasn't been any suggestion that he does not, including Kevin Durant straight up saying, like, yeah, I was upset at him about the vaccination thing, but like, I'm not going to like be really mad at him. Like, that's still my friend, and I'm not going to hate him outside of basketball or whatever. If he wants Kyrie Irving there, then Kyrie Irving, I think, is going to be there. And until that changes, I don't know that anything else changes. So yeah, it seemed like maybe just some posturing ahead of what will be a fascinating contract extension discussion for Kyrie Irving. But I also kind of feel like I can't see him not getting a long, lucrative contract if that's what Kevin Durant wants to happen. I think if that's what KD still wants, then the only question, really relevant question that the Nets are going to ask Kyrie is, what color pen do you want to sign with?
Onward to the Suns. Shockingly bounced in the way that they were, and then Patrick Beverley piling on. What do you make of the Suns' future? And is Chris Paul really that bad? I didn't realize it until Patrick Beverley told me.
Well, I mean, it was sort of a perfect storm. Like, you wonder if people talk about like having a go bag, like if you're somebody who has to travel a lot, just like a bag packed by the door. Did Pat Bev have one just packed, ready to go for the second ESPN called, so that he could hate on Chris Paul on national television for 2 days? There's no way to read the last few games of that other than like either Chris Paul really was hurt or this is the kind of thing where Chris Paul is like, it's just all right, another late season series debacle that happens to coincide with an injury. You know, I think that it is a dangerous position for Phoenix to be in, because while there's so much to be excited about, or has been so much to be excited about over these last couple of years, now you're at, all right, so DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams clearly have something to get over, because Monty, you know, yanked him, so it's, you know, like, before the end of the fourth quarter and didn't put him back in and was very brusque about why. And now there's you didn't extend Ayton before the season, so now it's, are you extending Ayton from his rookie deal now? And if not, you know, what do you do with the guy who was the number one pick in the draft when, oh, by the way, you could have drafted Luka Doncic, the guy that just eliminated you on your home court, laughing at you with every shot that he hit? Booker is very good. He's going to be an All-NBA caliber player for, you know, the foreseeable future. But your window to be a championship team is now, because Chris Paul is 37, and like that's what has elevated the franchise. So, they have to figure out what they do with Ayton. They're going to have to figure out what they pay Cam Johnson after having paid Mikal Bridges a lot of money. The tension of why this fell apart the way it did, and why Williams, who I voted for Coach of the Year the last 2 years running, didn't seem to have any answers for the adjustments that Jason Kidd made mid-series to completely defang what had been an incredible offense. There's a lot of questions to answer, and that's before you get to the part where the owner is like under investigation by the league and might wind up getting run out on a rail.
Talking to Dan Devine from The Ringer on Twitter at YourManDevine. And among the reasons you should read him, this is from before last night. He wrote, Wiggins will get the primary assignment on Doncic from the jump. It'll be up to him to at least slow Luka down, forcing Doncic to shake him around screens and using his length to contest Doncic's pull-ups and floaters from behind without fouling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do the uncomfortable dirty work. Basically, you told me exactly what was going to happen, and I still watched most of the game. What's happening tonight? No, Wiggins was great. We all laughed at Andrew Wiggins' first-team All-Star, or making the All-Star. Was he first-team? Yes, first-team All-Star. And that was laughable in a way. But boy, he is important, hasn't he been?
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you almost haven't really seen quite so much since the days of like the mid-'80s Lakers and Celtics, or the early 80s Lakers and Celtics, where it's you had these guys who were top of the draft or all-star players, but then they kind of wind up being these role players on the bigger teams along, you know, like, it's like, you know, Michael Thompson, you know, was like a number one pick, but then winds up being a role player on those Lakers, or like Bill Walton after some injuries winds up being the sixth man on those Celtics. Like, not saying that Andrew Wiggins is a Hall of Famer in the new phase of his career, but like, if Andrew Wiggins was a disappointment as the number one pick in the draft who you hoped could be the superstar that would elevate the Minnesota Timberwolves, Andrew Wiggins can, it seems like, be a heck of a 3-and-D guy, you know, maybe overqualified for the exact role that Golden State needs him to play. I don't expect he's going to hold Luka Doncic to 6-for-18 shooting for the rest of the series, but the idea of, all right, you are going to just pick him up and hound him the entire length of the court, something we saw him do to Tyus Jones a fair amount later in the series, and you know, you're going to, and then when you get the chance, like, he's not just a guy who has to stand in the corner and hold the ball. He is a guy who averaged 20 points a game for a few years. Like, he can get the ball and go attack Luka. And so, like, it gives you a starting point for sort of two ways to approach the main problem that you have to solve in the series if you're Golden State. He was phenomenal. He was absolutely what they needed him to be, and then that allowed him, the fact that he was making shots early and that he was keeping Luka from both getting off and getting other players involved, it really allowed the Warriors to kind of get through the part where Steph wasn't hitting shots and Klay wasn't hitting shots, and then until the third quarter, and then you know, the floodgates open, as we've seen so many times for Golden State over the years.
Dan, we appreciate it. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.